This audio recording is produced by Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous, also known as FA. FA is a program based on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is free and open to anyone who wants to stop eating addictively. The following is one FA member's story of recovery. The opinions expressed here are those of the individual member and do not represent FA as a whole. If you are new or uncertain about FA, we encourage you to listen to several stories to gain an understanding of what the program offers. For information on the FA program, please visit our website, foodaddicts.org.
It's really an honor to be here at this to do this today. I was thinking on the way back from dinner just how much my life has changed because this program. I'll give you my statistics first. I came in this program September 6, 1996, at 207 pounds, and clearly not just a hopeless life was what I was living at 30. And I've lost 62 pounds and have kept it off and have been abstinent for about almost 5.5 years. Thank you, God. And it's been a tremendous gift. I am in the DC Fellowship, and we started out very small and have grown over the years. And it's been a wonderful gift to be a part of that. I'll tell you a little bit about what my life was like, what happened and what it's like now. And I like to spend a lot of time on what it's like now because that's where it's at. You know, I grew up in a wonderful, loving family. I'm an only child. My parents were told they couldn't have children. So when my mother was told she was pregnant, she didn't believe the doctors for quite some time. I was really wanted and had all the support and love you could have as a kid. You know, anything I wanted wasn't spoiled, of course, but anything I wanted, within reason, you know, they were supportive and I could have. But, you know, from the time I was a very small child, I had this sense that I didn't belong with these people. There was something different about me. I never felt comfortable in my own skin. And the weight was a huge issue from early on. I was a chubby kid. And chubby's only cute for a little while. And the chubby is no longer cute. And that certainly happened to me. And I have all the normal stories of, you know, shopping in the chubby section at Sears, which I hated, when all my friends are wearing all these really cute clothes and I'm over here in the chubby section. And I would always shop, like, looking around my shoulder and make sure nobody I knew was there. And because I was wanting to be like everybody else. I didn't look like everybody else. I didn't feel like everybody else. And my best comfort was the food, you know, from very early on. And I would beg, borrow, and steal it all the time. And I grew up in a family that loved food. My grandparents owned a restaurant, and I spent a lot of my summers there with them. And all I did all summer was eat. And one summer I came home after gaining a significant amount of weight, and my mother looked at me and said, "Oh my God, what happened to you?" And that started, you know, the shame and the guilt that I felt around the food and associated with what I looked like. And that really started years of hiding and sneaking eating and just a lot of remorse. And I spent a lot of years hiding food under my bed. I'd always joke that people have their teddy bear and their blankie and, you know, their whatever. And I had aluminum foil packets of flour sugar products that I spent most of the afternoon baking while my parents weren't home. And then, you know, and then acting like nothing happened. But having it in the middle of the night when they were sleeping. And the insanity of this disease kicked in for me really early. One story in particular is I was home alone on a snow day, and there was a bake thing my mother had made, and I spent the entire day being called by this thing from my bedroom, from the kitchen, and all day long going back and forth to get it. And it never occurred to me that each little itty-bitty slice that I took from that was going to mean the whole thing was going to be gone at some point, and it was. So then I was like, I'd eaten this whole thing, and I was going to be in so much trouble, and it never occurred to me that would happen because I was only taking these little bitty little slices. But I did what any self-respecting 9 or 10-year-old food addict would do when you're told not to do certain things. I baked another one. And, you know, and I got busted because I took it out a little too soon. And so my mother kept looking at it. And finally, she said, "There's something not right with this." And I was like, "Well, I ate the whole thing. And oh my God," and I made another one. She was more upset that I made another one because I wasn't supposed to turn on the oven than I had eaten all of it. Like, she didn't care. But that for me was the insanity. Like, it never occurred. I had to have it, had to have it. And I spent my whole childhood and my teenage years having to have that that thing was going to make me feel better because there was nothing in here. I was the good little girl. I made myself into this great student, great friend, do anything for you, because I felt so bad about myself on the inside that I figured if I had a lot of friends and everybody thought I was great, that would make me okay, you know. And then I just kept right on eating, you know. And it's just really, really difficult years, you know. I didn't date. I didn't go to any parties. I didn't do anything like that when I was in high school. You know, I was a girl, oh, I don't want to go anyway. I don't care about those things anyway. I knew that was my thing. I didn't care. You know, I cared a lot, but I refused to feel. But I wouldn't let myself show that. I mean, I had a very much like permagrin. I call it the permagrin, and that's what I look like all the time. Everything's great. Everything's great. And, you know, for 30 years, that was my look. And so I got, you know, grew up and, you know, just hating myself and hating my life and thinking, you know, through high school that the problem was Pittsburgh, where I grew up. And so I immediately decided to go to college elsewhere so I could get out of there. And found a college in Michigan and went to school there. And my mother tells this story, and she was just actually visiting me last week, and she said, I was, you know, we dropped you off on this campus in the middle of nowhere in Michigan. You didn't know anybody. And I'm just, like, sobbing. My only child is, like, at this place. Well, I'm like, bye-bye. See you later. You know, because I thought, finally, I can be somewhere where no one knows me, and I can make myself over and be somebody else, this person that, you know, was out there doing things and didn't feel the way I felt about myself all the time. And I thought, being in Michigan, in this place where no one knew me, I could do that. And I felt the same way there. And I quickly fell into eating, you know, the freshman 15 was like the freshman 45 or something for me. I mean, it was just, and I started drinking my first night there, which I had never done. They let me room with a senior, and I'm not sure how brilliant that was to put an 18-year-old kid with a 21-year-old woman, but they did that. And we were immediately at a party, and I was immediately handed a drink, and everyone else is drinking, and I want to fit in more than anything. All I ever wanted was to fit in, and so I'm just drinking like everybody else. And I'm an addict, so now I know that. So most people would have one. I had like a six-pack, you know, and I don't even drink. So that started 4 years of it's sad when you can sum up 4 years of your college career in three sentences, but I figured out how to do it. A lot of eating, a lot of drinking, and a lot of crushes on men that didn't know I was alive. And a fantasy life that was very active, and a real life that was, you know, revolved around work and school and beating myself up for all the things I wasn't doing right. Because I had a very narrow view of this is what I was supposed to do and how I was supposed to be. And if I moved out of it, I was a terrible person. See, what I think about myself is true. I'm a terrible person. And that's really how I felt about myself. And, you know, and it was really, really painful. You know, I mean, I think high school and college is supposed to be these great years. And, you know, I was miserable. I was miserable the whole time. And but you wouldn't know it because, boy, I was like, everything's great all the time. And I just used food. I used alcohol. I used people pleasing. And I used work a lot. Work will play a huge part of my story as well, to make myself feel better, anything, to make myself feel better. And I managed to graduate college. And, you know, that's a significant moment in your life. And what I remember most about college graduation is that the dessert thing we had at this restaurant down the street in Lansing after graduation, that's what I remember. I don't know where my diploma is right now, actually, but I remember that restaurant and I remember what we ate. You know, and the funny thing is, so does my mother. My mother brought up to me at our trip, you remember that dessert thing we had? And I'm like, yeah, I do. Like, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. You know, but the main thing I can say about most of my growing up is was this awful self-loathing, this incredible self-loathing. And people always used to give me the cards to say, if you only saw yourself the way the rest of us do, I never knew what they meant by that because I'm like, well, you know, I'm a screw up. Y'all know, it's like, that's what I know. And they were like, I was so disconnected. So I graduated from college and I moved back to Pittsburgh and started working. And I should say that my sophomore year, my father died. I went through that whole funeral time in an absolute daze. I mean, I got off the plane and neighbors picked me up at the airport and they were just wanting to comfort me and come to get me. And I was like, I need to go to the snack area and get this thing. Like, I couldn't even talk to them because I was fixated this whole time on this flight about getting this food, you know? And I spent that entire 2 weeks in the time of the funeral just in a food, like, haze. My sponsor, gratefully, has helped me see this. Probably that's the only way I was going to get through that time. But I overheard people saying, do you even think she knows what's going on right now? And that's how out of it I was during my father's funeral. And as you know, everyone brings food, so all you have to do is eat. So I moved back to Pittsburgh, and I got a job, and I was working in television, which is what I went to school for. So, and I actually, before that, I got a job, and I got involved with this guy that will be the first of a series of really inappropriate relationships I was about to enter into. And my criteria was like, well, no married people or anything like that, but whatever. So this guy was engaged, so it wasn't quite married, and so, I thought that, you know, no one knew. It was just a guy I work with, and the whole office knew, and I thought I was being so, like, adult and, like, secretive, and everybody knew, and I entered this situation and got out of it and thought, well, it's the food. The food is the problem. So January, right after the holidays, I joined Weight Watchers. And like January 2nd, there I was at Weight Watchers. And I was like, this is going to be good. And this is going to be good. Meanwhile, I had dieted a lot off and on through the years. You know, I had the calorie counter book like attached to my hip. I was consistently writing calories and fat grams. And it was like a human calculator, you know. And so I do Weight Watchers. And, you know, I come in about the same weight I came into FA at, actually. And lost 60-some pounds. And there's a picture in my album of me in a wedding at that time when I got thin before. And I was thin, but I was crazy as a loon, just nuts. And I would go on the weigh-ins and weigh in and be like, oh, you've lost this weight. Well, great, thanks. And beeline out of that meeting to my fast food joint of choice for the day. Binge all day and then jump on back on Weight Watchers the next day. You know, and it was just nuts. I even went so far as to work for Weight Watchers for several years as a leader. So here I am, like, leading women in these, like, and today we're going to talk about eating out and what you should do and da-da-da-da-da. Meanwhile, I'm thinking, as soon as I get out of here, I'm going over to such and such. And I'm, you know, it was crazy. It was crazy. And so I'm thin, and I get a job in television. I buy a car. So I'm like, whoo-hoo. I'm like young, professional, single woman working, got a car. I'm like all that. So, you know, so I need a boyfriend, of course. And I meet him at the gas station where I get my gas for this car I've bought. I don't know why people laugh. Everybody meets their boyfriend at the gas station. Anyway, I do anyway. So then we entered a situation, and this was someone who was in a drug dealer family. He was an ex-drug dealer, which is what I like to say. And when you have strangers coming up and warning you about someone you're involved with, you think that maybe you'd listen. Or when he tells you, I'm about to go do something that could be somewhat dangerous, and so if I don't come back, there's money in the back room, and I'll call you if I need you to go get the money and do something with it. The most self-respecting women would run like hell out of the room. I patiently waited for this man to come back because I loved him and I needed him and I was not leaving. So then when he got the other girl pregnant, it still just didn't occur to me that maybe I needed to, you know, let him go and move on with my life. And it took, because, you know, finally somebody cared about me. And that's all I ever wanted, someone to accept me and care about me. And so I was going to stay there. And that's what I did. And but God has a way of taking care of you when you can't take care of yourself. And I lost my job and moved. And was gone for months from Pittsburgh, traveling around the country. And then after the election, moved to Washington. And so he was kind of out of the picture, which was the only way he was going to be out of the picture, because I was going to sit there and stay. So I moved to Washington and started what I'll call the succession of really high-powered, wonderful, killer jobs that I let kill me. Because when you don't have any self-esteem, I thought, well, I'll do really good work to save the world, and that'll make me a good person. And so I immediately set out to do that. And I worked for some very high-powered, very highly respected, crazy people. And when you don't have any boundaries and you don't have any self-esteem, those kind of people will suck the life out of you. And that's what happened. I worked my first day in one job, I worked till midnight. didn't occur to me. I called my mother like at 10 or 11 o'clock and I was still there. She goes, why are you still there? I'm like, because of all the work to do. And, you know, I had no boundaries. I missed my best friend's wedding because I had to work. You know, those are the kind of decisions I make because work became all important because that made me okay, you know. So between the work that was nuts and my people-pleasing, which was off the charts. I mean, I'm the person that would give you my last $10 when I didn't get paid anymore for 2 weeks because I didn't know how to say no to you. You know, I'm the person that let one of my roommates drive my car to the point where the sunroof was broken because someone that was mad at him decided to break it. When all my other broke the passenger or driver's side door or seat and all these other things, and everyone in my life is saying, why are you letting this man drive your car? What are you doing? And all I could say was, well, he needs my help. And it's only a car. And so I had to sell that car for junk because I couldn't get out of this body. Don't do this anymore. Because I didn't know how to say no to people. I didn't know how to do any of that because I just was like, if I do that, I literally thought lightning was going to strike. I mean, I'm sharing with you some of how I thought because you'll understand that when you think you're this worthless, which is what I thought, it's really hard to make any kind of rational decision. And so my life was work and my life was food. You know, and so I lived in a group house for a while with a bunch of other roommates and so I was hiding food again in my dresser drawers like I used to do when I was a kid. Because I didn't want them to know how much I was eating. I'd make these big meals when no one else was home, really for me. And then they would come home and they'd be like, oh, you made dinner. And I'd be like, yeah, I made dinner. But now I'm going to eat all this myself. But okay, now that you're home, I guess I have to share it with you. And I was also taking care of those people. I was the house mother. I paid the bills. I arbitrated all the arguments, took care of all of you. So I didn't have to focus on me because I didn't know how and I didn't want to, you know. And I moved into my own apartment. Moved out of that group house situation, and that's when the food really took a nosedive for me because all of a sudden I was alone, and my cat can't say much to me, so he just look, you know, and so, you know, and he just look at me eat. But I should tell you, my cat weighs about 23 pounds or something, and so I'm weighing and measuring his food now, and so we're trying to get him on a little bit of, you know, the vet told me that he was in danger of some health issues, so we're trying to work with him too. He's not happy with me either, but, I mean, you know, of course I have a food addict cat, absolutely. But back to, I want to share a little bit about what my life was like right before I came in, because it was really, really a dark time in my life. You know, I got involved with a married man, and it was a total, absolute secret that I kept, like, I didn't tell anybody about this person. And if anyone who knows me, I have this image of being this sweet and innocent and blah, blah, blah person. And so he was like, this is brilliant, because no one would ever think about you doing anything like this. And it was like, yeah, but it was killing me. I couldn't talk about it, and all I could do was eat. You know, so I'm the person who would work all day, go to all my favorite fast food places, come home with all my boxes and bags, and eat to myself silly, my remote control, my sweatpants, and this all night. And that was every night. A ringer off, my friends not being able to find me or talk to me. And, you know, it was just terrible. You know, and this was every day. When the fast food, when takeout places, when you call them, know you by name from your voice, I'll be over in a few minutes. I mean, that's what my life was like. You know, I live in a fairly trendy little area in D.C., and there's like a grocery store here and a bunch of restaurants here, and I would spend my days in the morning like, okay, you're not going to go over there this morning and get my thing of choice. You're not going to get it. And then I'd be like, you're not going to get it. And then, you know what? I'd be in the store. Like, okay, you're here now, but you're not going to buy five. You're only going to buy this. And then I'd have, okay, you're not going to eat all these you've bought now. And it was just this constant. Then it was, oh, you've done it. You've done this again. So now you might as well go get. And then it would just be off the whole day. This is every day, this constant torture in my head about things like that. And I would spend the whole day at work thinking about the next meal, the next thing, the next, what am I going to eat next? I don't know how I got any work done. You know, because all I really thought about was, where's my next food thing going to come from? Because that was the most important thing in my life. You know, my friends are all calling me, can't find you, what are you doing? Oh, really busy. And my ringer's off and I'm eating in my apartment by myself in the dark. That's what I'm doing. You know, and when I would go out with you, of course we went out for a meal and I would eat a tremendous amount, wait in the lobby of my building until you drove around the corner and then I'd leave and go out and buy more food. You know, because whatever I ate in front of you was not enough. I was just trying to not embarrass myself too much in public, you know, because there was never enough food that was enough. And, you know, I'm in a continued to have jobs that were insane. I did really great work. I mean, people were, you know, because I gave every ounce of my being to every single job because I didn't know how to say, wait a minute, you know. I mean, it just, I didn't know how to say it. I didn't know how to say anything to anybody except, yeah, what do you want me to do? That's what I thought, and that's what I did. And finally, it's funny that what really got me in the program was a good friend of mine going on a weight loss program herself and being so full of herself that all she did was talk about herself for hours. And I went on a meal with her. And if you ever go on a meal with someone who's on a real successful diet plan, so all they do is talk about how great they feel and how wonderful their life is now they've lost the weight. Well, I want to kill this woman. I mean, it took everything I had not to just jump over the table and like slam her in this restaurant, you know. But I listened to every, I feel so great and I've lost this weight and blah, blah, blah. But I, of course, I did what I would do. I sat through this lunch. I left her. I went and bought a whole bunch of food. Went back to my apartment. I sat on the floor and I started binging, you know. And I just looked around and I'm like, rest of your life, is this what you're going to do? Like, you've got to do something. You're involved with this married man. You think that's all you're ever going to get. Like, you're not, you don't deserve anybody else. And I should say that when really nice men have approached me or tried to be with me or, you know, I'm like, I'm not good enough for you. I actually said that to my mother, and I was dating a really nice person that she just loved. Ooh, boy, she loved this guy. And so I was like, and she said, well, what happened? I don't understand. He was so nice. And I just said to her, I'm not good enough for him. You know, and I believe that. I mean, I absolutely believe that. And she said, what any mother would say, because how do you respond to your daughter saying that, you know, that? And she just said, well, that's so not true. Don't ever say anything like that again. You know, and that wasn't very helpful because, I just, you know, of course, that's what I thought. That's what I thought about myself. And so, but if you were, you know, a drug dealer, married, kind of crazy, I thought you were great, you know, and because that made sense to me. Like, see, I deserve to be with somebody like you. Some really nice person didn't make any sense to me. So I'm sitting on the floor with all these bags and boxes. And so I start saying, okay, you're going to go back to Weight Watchers. So I have a Weight Watchers, find the Weight Watchers thing. And there's this other diet program in D.C. that maybe other people have them where they make, like, food to go. Like, they package your meals for you and they deliver them to you. And they're already pre-measured and supposed to be really nutritious. And so I had, and so I was going to do that. And I'm thinking, Weight Watchers, how many times can, you're a lifetime member, how many times have you gone back? How you'd never last longer than, you know, 2 weeks. You know, this, these people are going to bring you this food. You're going to eat all of it in one sitting. You're not going to do what they're supposed to do with it. And it's like, what are you going to do? And a few weeks before that, I had been with a friend. And we've been friends for a long time, but neither one of us ever talked about food. But she was doing something different with her food. And I remember when we were out that she was doing something different. And so I'm sitting on the floor in my apartment. And for some reason, instead of calling Weight Watchers, it's other place, I called her. And I said, well, what are you doing? And I'm so grateful that she answered me. And she's one of my dearest friends. And I'm a little tearing up because she's here. And she's why I'm here. It's because she was willing to do service and tell me about this program. And so I'm like, I'm going to meetings. I'm like, okay, where are they? What? I'll be there. And so I started going to meetings. And I went to the first meeting of what we do here of weighing and measuring on September 6, 1996. And I sat and I listened a little bit, and someone was giving a food plan to somebody else and saying she could sponsor. And I said, well, do you have room for one more? And she said, yeah, I do. And I said, okay. And so I, and they said, you know, and we, this is the place where we had, there was a food, there was a cafeteria there. So they were, immediately went and got me an abstinent lunch and sat me down. Like, they were like, eat this. And I was like, okay. So I ate this. And then they said, go home and throw away all this stuff and go get this stuff. And I'm like, okay. You have a scale? I'm like, yes. And I'm like, okay, call me tomorrow at 6 o'clock, whatever. I'm like, okay. So I started calling. Well, you know, I spent my whole life hiding from myself, talking about other people. So 15 minutes on the phone with somebody to talk about me? Like, you must be kidding me. And so she said, God bless this woman. Because how you doing? Fine. What are you doing today? I'm going to work. So what else is going on? Nothing. I know how to talk about me because I don't want to. You know, well, if I was strong-willed, she's stronger. And she beat me down. She asked me question after question after question. And I just finally started to go, okay, well, let me talk to this woman. And, you know, and so I was doing okay. I broke my abstinence right after I got 90 days, which was really difficult in our fellowship because we had so few people. And I broke my abstinence because I could not speak up for myself and I wouldn't take care of myself. And some friends had made decision to go to a restaurant. We'd made decision to go to a restaurant, and I knew what the restaurant was, and I felt comfortable with it. And I walked away, and I came back, and they changed their mind. And so instead of saying, that doesn't work for me, I can't do it, or can we figure something else out, I got mealy-mouthed and whiny and said, okay, I'll see if something will work for me. And I knew it wouldn't, and I went, and I ate something I shouldn't have, you know. And then I lied about it for a week to my sponsor, you know. And finally, I can't lie about my food, you know. So the first day was like I had one bite. And then the second day it was two. And then finally, by the end of the week, I had eaten the whole thing. I finally just couldn't deal with it anymore. Funny, she already had suspected such, so I wasn't being that, you know, transparent. But that was the most valuable lesson I've learned, or one of the most valuable lessons, because I realized in that moment, I don't start putting my recovery first. And if I don't make it the priority that it is, then I will continue to have that kind of problem. And people will continue to walk all over me, and I'll continue to be a doormat because I have to take care of myself. And so I started, after that, learning to speak up and finding a voice. And what I like to say is I came in to this program, you know, much bigger physically and really small in here. And what's happened is I've gotten much bigger in here and smaller physically, you know. And there is, I mean, you know, I used to walk with my head down. I couldn't look you in the eye. I had no self-confidence, you know, absolutely none. You know, I mean, I just would go along with the group and whatever you wanted, I would do. And it was just, you know, because I didn't have any sense of myself because I didn't like myself. Slowly but surely, putting my food on the scale, weighing, measuring, my, you know, and no flour, no sugar, and going to meetings and talking to a sponsor, and most importantly, asking God for help, and living, and starting to understand and live these steps, you know, I found out that I had a voice. I had opinions about things, you know, and people wanted to know what they were. Now, they didn't always want me to agree with them, which is what I thought you wanted. You actually wanted to know what I thought, you know, and so all of a sudden, it was like, wait a minute. You know, I have some value here, and I started to really start to think differently about who I am. And I think the best way to think about that is, you know, I totally changed, you know, how I look physically. I mean, I did this with my hair. It's something I'd always dreamed about doing, never had enough guts, like, and I did it, you know. And I've started to pursue things, you know. I didn't share when I was younger. I was a singer as a kid, and when people would ask me to sing, you know, and I'd be like, oh, great. And then as more people started asking me, more people started noticing that I could sing, I got scared because I was the fat girl singing. And if I didn't sing it perfectly, because there was that perfectionism, if I couldn't do it perfectly, I wasn't going to do it at all. And so I quit singing when I was a kid. And in the grace of this program, in the grace of recovery, I auditioned in front of other people and joined the choir for a while and sang with them and went all over D.C. in this really ugly blue dress that I'm glad no pictures were ever taken of, and so we're singing again, and I've let go of that choir, but now I'm singing the choir in my church, and I get so much joy out of doing something that I love to do. I've even taken voice lessons again a little bit, too, and so I've recaptured something that I let go of because I was too afraid. That fear, doubt, and insecurity just ruled my life, and if I couldn't do something, I wasn't going to do it, you know, and so I just learned to really speak up for my life, you know, and mainly for my recovery, you know, because it's my, I have to do that today, you know. So I had bosses who would hire, one boss who was going to hire me, but I was able to say to this particular boss, you know, you work 14 hours a day. I cannot do that, but I can give you a great 8 hours a day. And if you need something special, other times we can see, but this is all I can do. And if you want someone more than that, I'm not the person for this job. Well, this is one of those, like, who said that moments? Because it wasn't me, you know. But I said it, and he said, okay, we can work with that, you know. And we did, you know. And there were special times when I need to be there late, and I would be there. But on any given night, if I had a meeting particularly, I was out of there, you know, because I had to be at my meeting, because I had to do those things, you know. I mean, I have done things, and for me, when I say done things, it's just, you know, I have broken out of that box that I was living in and really have started to dream bigger than I ever could imagine. I lived in a really small apartment, and I kept thinking, I can't move because they're going to check my credit, and my credit is really bad, and so I'd have to stay in this little apartment. Well, I finally was just like, you know what? I'm going to try. And so I looked in an apartment, and they did a credit check, and I just said, you know, I've had some history problems in the past with my credit, but I'm repairing them, and here's what I'm doing, and here's the name of the credit counselor that I have, and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, okay, God, we'll see what happens. They called me later that day and was like, you got the apartment. Well, I live in an apartment now. You know, and for some of you that have homes, I live in a studio apartment. I have like a bedroom with a door, which is like really exciting. But just I have more space. And I bought real grown-up furniture for the first time that came in a few weeks ago. And I have like real furniture and not like the hand-me-down stuff I was sitting on, but like real like adult furniture, you know. And I'm growing up. And that's what I've been doing in this program. I'm growing up. And I've been dating, which is really interesting. But I've been doing it in a much saner way. And I had a relationship with someone that went on for several months. And it was clear that, you know, he was going in one direction and I was going in another. And in that situation in the past, I would have just been like, well, I'll wait you out. I'll hang out, see what you're going to figure out what you're going to do. And I just said, you know what? Clearly, we're going in different directions. And, you know, I need to take care of myself. And so I can't see you anymore because the only person that's going to get hurt here is me. Because I'm going to get more and more attached to you, and you have no idea what you're doing. And I walked away, you know, and he called and can't we be friends and can't we do that? And I'm like, no, we can't. You know, I learned that here, you know, like, if you're not good for me in my life, I can't have you there. You know, I was sort of dating somebody else recently and things went well. We had a couple of good dates and then he stood me up. Well, previously, that would have been my fault. Well, that night he didn't call, and I could have sat home and like called everybody I know and been like, oh my God, he didn't show up and wasn't me. And, oh my God, blah, blah, blah. I found something else to do and I went out by myself, you know, because I knew other people's Friday night, other people had plans. I found a comedian in town that I love. I called and like, do you still have tickets? They were like, yeah. I'm like, cool. I went down and I saw this great comedian that I love by myself and I laughed. And, you know, I didn't have to sit there all night and beat up on myself about why he didn't call, because why he didn't call was his problem. Well, I would have always thought that why he didn't call was my problem. And so when he did call a month later, I was like, you know, you don't treat people that way. I deserved a phone call or something that was totally disrespectful. I deserve better treatment than that. You know, he was like, well, you know, I'm sorry. You know, whatever. And I was like, no. Well, can I get a second chance? I don't know. And he said, well, can I call you from time to time to see how you're doing? And I'm like, sure. So he called. I'd wait 5-6 days to call back. You know, it just wasn't that, you know. And he's dropped off the landscape now, which is just where he needed to go. He needed to drop off the landscape, you know, because I deserve somebody who really wants to be with me. And I deserve somebody who's going to show up in a real way, because that's how I show up today. I've learned in this program to really show up. And, you know, and I deserve to be treated, you know, decently, because that's how I treat other people. You know, and if you can't do that, you're not the person for me. You know, well, it comes a long way from waiting, being willing to be ready to sit with this guy who got somebody pregnant. You know, I mean, this is like leaps and bounds from where I've come from. And if more than anything, there's just, I have a confidence and a hope today, because I can tell you how hopeless I felt in that apartment, you know, with that food every night. It's my cat. And I thought my life is going to be this apartment with about 5 or 6 cats and my food, you know, and that's really what I thought my life was going to be like. And I have so much hope today that it could be so much bigger than that, you know. I have no idea what God's plan is, but it can be so much bigger than that, you know. And it amazes me, and as I watched everyone here today and I've heard people's stories, and I can hear these great stories of recovery, that this, you know, miracles happen here. And every day that I don't eat is an absolute miracle, because from the time when I was a little kid to 30 when I came in, that's all I knew to do. It was my best friend, my comforter. It soothed every hurt, ache. You know, if I was happy, I was eating. If I was sad, I was eating. If I was, you know, didn't know what I was feeling, which I never really did, I was eating. I mean, because the food was the only thing that I knew to do. And I realized now that's not the answer. You know, I finally caught on that it's not the answer. And it's just amazing to me that it's not, because I really believed that it was. And it has just truly been a blessing for me to have found this program, you know, and I can't say enough about how much it has done, you know, in my life. And that I'm thinking about things in the future that I never would have thought to do. I'm thinking of leaving my job and not necessarily finding another job, but striking out as a consultant on my own. I never would have taken a risk like that. But I'm like, you know, if I try and it doesn't work, I'll get a job. But if I don't ever try, I'll never know. You know, I mean, I'll never know if I could have done it or not, you know. And I don't have to live in that, yeah, it's somewhat scary, but I don't have to let the fear make the decision for me. That's what I always did. If I didn't know the outcome beforehand, I just wasn't going to do it. Like, too much, not going to do it. You know, so I'm really thinking, you know, I'm thinking about doing that, and it is such a miracle that I would even begin to think it, but I am. And it's just amazing how differently I feel, mainly about myself, you know, because I really thought that was hopeless, worthless, piece of crap, you know, and I let myself get treated that way too, you know, and I'm sure people, you know, thought that I was just this wonderfully gracious person, and I had one of my best friends I made an amends to, and she said, you know, all you've always, I mean, I basically took care of her, myself, and her infant son for a long time on my salary. Like, I was just constantly giving her money. And she said, you know, I could never repay you for what you did, and I know you sacrificed a lot. And she goes, but you really taught me a lot about about being a friend for the way you did that, you know. And but my amends to her, though, was, yeah, I did all of that for you, like material. I could give you money, but she had knew nothing about me because I never shared anything about me. You know, I was constantly helping her crisis manage or deflecting the situations, but she was like, but I was like, but I never shared anything with you about my life, what I was feeling, what was going on with me. And she goes, no, you didn't, but you do now. You know, I know you today, you know, and because, you know, I didn't want anyone to know me because I, you know, I didn't like myself. So I never shared anything real, you know. I mean, I was doing great, but I never shared anything real about something that was paining me or worrying me or scaring me or, you know, you didn't know that. Now I pick up the phone and everybody knows I'm really scared about this and I'm really worried about this and I'm not sure what to do about this. What do you think? And I'm, you know, and because I have to share with people what's going on with me because that's what I used to eat over, you know. And I've got like, you know, from the time I was 5 or 6 to the time I was 30, that many years worth of stuff that I stuffed down in here, you know. And I always think about that movie, Little Shop of Horrors, and the big plant and he's like, feed me, feed me, feed me. And that's what was going on in here. It was just feed me, feed me, feed me. And I just couldn't get enough food, couldn't get enough work, couldn't get enough people-pleasing, couldn't get enough being this perfect box that I lived in. I just, you know, nothing was ever enough. It was always looking for the thing that was going to be enough. And, you know, and I can't, you know, and there was never enough, you know. There was never going to be anything. What fills me up today is, you know, this program and living in recovery, you know, and have a reliance on God and being of service, you know, and just trying to help another food addict today brings me so much joy, you know, more than I could ever imagine. If I could help one person, you know, it's worth it. You know, if one person hears this tape, which these tapes are so critical, and I know that when I was in our DC fellowship, you know, that's all we had for many years was this tape because we had 4 or 5 people. And if it weren't for them, our fellowship wouldn't be where it is today. So I understand how important these tapes are, which is why I was honored to be asked to do it, because they're critical for recovery. And, you know, and I need to tell my own stories, I remember, because it's really easy to run around in my little size 8 and think I'm real cute and forget that I'm a food addict. You know, I need to remember that. I have to remember where I come from. I need to look at my own pictures. You know, I need to do that. You know, I recently took a trip to Florida and had a chance to do some service down there. But I also did a first, which was I bought my first bathing suit while I was in Florida. And, you know, and it's even better miracle that that picture is in that album, because I didn't think I'd ever show another soul. You know, if you weren't on the beach that day, you weren't ever going to see me in that suit. That's a real illustration of my recovery, that I'm willing to share that picture with other people, that I'm willing to let other people see, yeah, this is what I look like. And I can stand up today in a room and feel really confident. And I never was confident before about me, ever, you know, that, you know, and I've had a lot of opportunities come up for me recently. I've just gotten elected president of the choir at my church. And it's like, what an honor that I can be of service to my fellow choir members, you know, with something that I really love to do. And I'm chairing the intergroup in Washington as well, another opportunity to give back what I've been given in so many ways, because I really see that the more, you know, it's like the more you give away, you get so much back in return. And that is so important to have. And so I am just totally, I can't even say how grateful I am for this program. And what I like the most is that I've learned to be credible and consistent And what I was taught that first day in September is what I still do right now. You know, I get up in the morning and I get on my knees and I ask God for an abstinent day, because I spent my whole life thinking, I could do it, I can do it, I can fix this, I can do this. I can't do a thing alone. And I need God's help, particularly around the food, which I'm absolutely powerless over, you know. And then I, you know, talk to my sponsor in the days I talk to her. You know, I read my 24-hour day book and I do that 30 minutes of quiet time without fail. That is the most important thing to do, is that quiet time. It is not easy at first, and it really wasn't easy for me, but it has become something that I just value so much and look forward to. My time to connect and just be still. And I make my 3 phone calls. I go to 3 meetings. You know, I read my big book at night, and I get on my knees and say, thank God for an abstinent day. And whatever service I can do in between that is what I like to do. It's what I need to do. And I have this amazing life that I never thought I could have, you know, and I'm becoming this person I never dreamed I could be. And I had the opportunity. My mother was out to visit me just a few weeks ago. One real example of how I show up today is that she'd been saying to me, I'd love for us to get portraits taken together. We need to get portraits taken together. Well, I made an appointment for us to get portraits taken together while she was visiting. And so I called her and said, we're on for this day to get these portraits taken. And she's like, okay. And so we showed up. And then my mom and I have a real, I think any mom and daughter does, about how I looked before was a real issue. And so she brought this really nice outfit to wear. And she said, what are you going to wear? And it was like, uh-oh. You know, because whatever I choose is not going to be it. And so I said, here are your options. And I pulled my clothes out. And I'm like, I could wear this. I could wear this. I could wear this. And I was like, you pick. You know, and that isn't a moment of growth for the two of us. I don't know what it is, because that would have been World War III, you know, otherwise, because I'm sure whatever I picked would not have been what she wanted me to wear. And she picked something and I wore it. And we got the pictures taken, and I just got the call right before I was leaving to come up here that they were ready. And so I'm going to go pick them up this week. So I can't say enough about FA, about living in recovery, about how much this program has changed. But there aren't enough words to say how grateful I am for what has happened in my life, and how grateful I am to have found this program. I would truly appreciate my friend being willing to be honest with me and tell me about this, because I wouldn't have found it on my own. And that's just the gift of service. When we say we do service by being abstinent, it's true, because one person tells another person, and that's how this works. And I'm really grateful to be here. It's an honor and a privilege to stand up here and be able to share my story. And, you know, these last 5.5 years have been, I wrote in my journal the night I started that this was the beginning of the rest of my life. And I don't know how I knew that in my insanity of that first day, but that's exactly what this has been. These last 5.5 years have been the most amazing I've ever had. And a day at a time, I expect much more, because good things happen. Life still happens, but so many good things happen. And so I thank you.
Thank you for listening to this audio recording. To hear additional recordings or to learn more about Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous, you can visit our website, foodaddicts.org.